God is showing us through Genesis chapter 36, through the life of Esau, he's saying to us something very, very powerful. He's saying there are very severe consequences to walking away from the Lord. There are severe consequences to rejecting Christianity. There are severe consequences to turning away from Jesus Christ. That's the message that comes out here. So the chapter is a warning to those who reject the promises. And God's saying then, well, then I want you to consider what that path looks like. I want you to consider what the path looks like so you know. I've told you ahead of time what the path of departure from me looks like.
We have in Scripture an awful lot of texts that show us what it looks like when we follow God. Here, we have a very sobering chapter in front of us, Genesis chapter 36, and what it looks like when we reject God. Welcome to Abounding Grace. Here's Pastor Chris Gordon as we begin our time together, the tragedy of Esau.
Genesis chapter 36 this morning, and we're going to consider the entirety of the chapter. Let's give our attention to the word of the Lord. These are the generations of Esau, that is Edom. Esau took his wives from the Canaanites. Ada, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon, the Hivite. And Basamah, Ishmael's daughter, the sister of Nebaioth. And Ada bore Esau, Eliphaz. Basamah bore Reuel. And Aholibamah bore Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. These are the sons of Esau who were born to him in the land of Canaan. Then Esau took his wives, his sons, his daughters, and all the members of his household, his livestock, all his beasts, and all his property that he had acquired in the land of Canaan. He went into a land away from his brother Jacob, for their possessions were too great for them to dwell together. The land of their sojournings could not support them because of their livestock. So Esau settled in the hill country of Seir. Esau is Edom. These are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in the hill country of Seir. These are the names of Esau's sons: Eliphaz, the son of Ada, the wife of Esau; Reuel, the son of Basamah, the wife of Esau. The sons of Eliphaz were Timon, Omar, Zepho, Gatam, and Kenaz. Timnah was a concubine of Eliphaz, Esau's son. She bore Amalek to Eliphaz. These are the sons of Ada, Esau's wife. These are the sons of Reuel: Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mizah. These are the sons of Basamah, Esau's wife. These are the sons of Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon, Esau's wife. She bore to Esau Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. These are the chiefs of the sons of Esau, the sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn of Esau, the chiefs Timon, Omar, Zepho, Kenaz, Korah, Gatam, and Amalek. These are the chiefs of Eliphaz in the land of Edom. These are the sons of Ada. These are the sons of Reuel, Esau's son, the chiefs Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mizah. These are the chiefs of Reuel in the land of Edom. These are the sons of Basamah, Esau's wife. These are the sons of Aholibamah, Esau's wife, the chiefs Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. These are the chiefs born of Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, Esau's wife. These are the sons of Esau, that is Edom, and these are their chiefs. These are the sons of Seir the Horite, the inhabitants of the land: Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anah, Dishon, Ezer, Dishon. These are the chiefs of the Horites, the sons of Seir in the land of Edom. The sons of Lotan were Horai, Hemam, and Lotan's sister was Timnah. These are the sons of Shobal, Alvin, Manahath, Ebal, Shepho, and Onam. These are the sons of Zibeon, Aya, Anna. He is the Anna who found the hot springs in the wilderness as he pastured the donkeys of Zibeon, his father. These are the children of Anah, Dishon, and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah. These are the sons of Dishon, Hemdan, Ishban, Ithran, and Sharon. These are the sons of Ezer, Bilhan, Zaavan, and Akan. These are the sons of Dishon, Uz, and Aran. These are the chiefs of the Horites, the chiefs of Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anah, Dishon, Ezer, and Dishon. These are the chiefs of the Horites, chief by chief, in the land of Seir. These are the kings who reigned in the land of Eden before any king reigned over the Israelites. Bela, the son of Beor, reigned in Edom, the name of his city being Dinhaba. Bela died in Jobab. The son of Zerah and Bosrah reigned in his place. Jobab died, and Husham of the land of the Temanites reigned in his place. Husham died, and Hadad, the son of Bedad, who defeated Midian in the country of Moab, reigned in his place. The name of his city is Avith. Hadad died, and Samla of Masreka reigned in his place. Samla died, and Shaul of Rehoboth of the Euphrates reigned in his place. Shaul died, and Baal-Hanan, the son of Achbor, reigned in his place. Baal-Hanan, the son of Achbor, died, and Hadar reigned in his place, the name of his city being Pau. His wife's name was Mehetabel, the daughter of Matred, daughter of Mezahab. These are the names of the chiefs of Edom according to their clans, their dwelling places by their names, the chiefs Timnah, Alva, Jetheth, Aholabama, Elah, Penon, Kenaz, Timon, Mibzar, Magdiel, and Aram. These are the chiefs of Edom, that is Esau, the father of Edom, according to their dwelling places in the land of their possession. And there will be a test afterwards. This morning at the front end of this service, we had our two brothers stand up and profess their faith in Jesus Christ. And I don't know if you've given much thought so far in the study of Genesis to the separation that has occurred, but a division was even made here. A division was made that God just separated out two of his sheep from the world, and he blessed them. And as they responded to his promises, he strengthened them. Think about the wonderful thing that happened today, that the angels in heaven rejoiced because two sinners repented. When I was thinking about their profession and I knew what was coming in Genesis, I thought, well, maybe I should skip this one for their profession. I mean, what does Esau have to do with this? This is not a easy passage by any means to approach. What good is there in this? I don't know if you stayed awake, but did you think, what good is there in this? But then I thought back to what God said to Rebekah when these two sons wrestled in the womb. And when these two sons wrestled in the womb, remember what God said to Rebekah would happen? Two peoples would be separated from your body. Two peoples. We have this morning a record of that division. That's what essentially this is. It's a record of the division that God told us would happen. It's not easy when we consider what we're going to consider, but I believe immensely helpful. It's important because I believe we easily forget that there is a division that God has made. I don't think we think about this very much. I think also we don't think about how this division shows itself or manifests itself on the earth. We've been studying Jacob for months. And we have looked at from this pulpit steadily grace. It has been wonderful, and no one could ever say there has not been grace throughout this. This whole thing has been the grace of God in delivering and bringing about deliverance for his sheep. And all along the way, God has been so good. It's been really encouraging to study this. God has been so good. God has blessed this man. And in the worst of messes that we've seen, God has pulled him out. It's been a case study of what grace looks like in somebody's life and how wonderful it is, how freeing it is. And it ended in chapter 35 with this marvelous response of Jacob as the grace had been worked in him by the Lord. Remember what happened at Bethel. He made a profession. He stood up. He said, "The Lord is my God. If God will do all this for me, then he'll be my God." That's essentially what you two did this morning. You said the Lord will be our God. But I think sometimes we forget what the opposite choice looks like. I think sometimes we don't think about enough what the opposite of this looks like and the turmoil it brings upon those who are separated out to the Lord. Oh, Christians in third world countries get this. That's why I prayed the way that I did this morning. Christians in third world countries understand this. Right now, some of the heaviest persecution. In fact, they say, we live in the history of the whole church in one of the most persecuted times ever. The martyrs that are happening, the martyrdoms around the world that are happening that we are totally, you never hear about on the news, we're totally oblivious to as we're leading our American lives. This is what's going on. And they understand the enemy. They get the enemy. They know what the enemy looks like. But we're somewhat spoiled here in the United States, aren't we? I'm thankful for it. But we can begin to think that the separation is just those of Islam who are murdering. Begin to think that's the separation. We can begin to think that all the barbaric acts that we see on the news and what we see happening in the world, well, that's the separation. That's it over there. And we really have not considered where true separation lies. I believe this morning the Lord is having us consider something that's difficult. I don't think there's anything easy about this. But nonetheless, it's like the bad tasting medicine in the back of the cabinet that none of us ever want to take out and have to take, but you need to take it because it's really good for you. That's Genesis 36. The development of somebody in their life who turned from the Lord. The development in somebody's life who walked away from the promises and decided, I don't want it. I'm going the other way. That's what Genesis 36 is. It has a goal this morning. The goal is that everyone who hears it would not do that and would come to the Lord. That's the goal. You know the intention right out of the gates. What we have here is a tracing of the genealogy of Esau and his settlement in Edom. For Israel, that would have had immense purpose because essentially as when Israel would come back to the land, it was Edom, the country of Edom, that would not let Israel pass through. Edom was a terrible enemy to Israel. And the purpose of that then would be, as this genealogy was traced out and Israel would look back and study this, they would be able to say, wow, there's our enemy. We see him. We see his development. We see what the enemy looks like. We see what's happened. And that's no less instructive for us today as we're taught to be separate from the enemy, as we're taught to recognize the enemy, to know what he looks like and know what he's doing. Well, if you look at verse 1, we read, this is the genealogy of Esau, and there are these 10 structures to the book of Genesis that really divide up Genesis into 10 books. And here we have that. Today we come to Esau, and we see a whole section separated out for Esau. There has been, at least in my mind, a question mark regarding Esau. A question mark. I wonder a lot about Esau. What happened to Esau? What does God want to tell us about Esau? What does this chapter tell us what happened to Esau? Well, he's given all these chapters to tell us of his wonderful workings in the life of Jacob and the grace that he received. And now we have this great one chapter of Genesis full of Esau's genealogy to tell us what happens to covenant breakers. And that's something we have to consider. I suppose it would be easy to sit and hear all of this grace and all of the Lord's wonderful workings and mercy and think, well, we believe in election. Therefore, God's clear purposes according to election are being worked out. And we look at Esau kind of fatalistically. And that's not what the Lord is having us do. That is not what the Lord is having us do. God is showing us through Genesis chapter 36, through the life of Esau, he's saying to us something very, very powerful. He's saying, there are very severe consequences to walking away from the Lord. There are severe consequences to rejecting Christianity. There are severe consequences to turning away from Jesus Christ. That's the message that comes out here. So the chapter is a warning to those who reject the promises. And God's saying then, well, then I want you to consider what that path looks like. I want you to consider what the path looks like so you know, I've told you ahead of time, what the path of departure from me looks like. What happened with Esau? What happened with Esau? If you were to go back and to study the life of Esau, there were certain things happening and there were certain choices that he was making all along the way that the scriptures have taught us a lot about. Jacob, of course, had been no better. And that's the marvel of the whole thing. If anything, Jacob had been worse. Jacob had deceived his brother, and we'll come back to Jacob at the very end of this. But remember what happened. Jacob had deceived his brother. Esau was hungry, and Jacob and his mom got together and cooked the stew. And remember what happened. Jacob made the proposition, sell me your birthright, and I will give you, you know, I will give you some of my red stew. Boys and girls, remember what Esau said? What's my birthright to me? It doesn't matter. Now that little statement said a lot. The birthright as the firstborn meant that he had the right to be the principal heir of the Abrahamic blessing. And what did he do with it? He showed us what was in his heart, that a bowl of stew was more valuable than God's promises. And so we studied from an early age in the life of Esau, in the very beginning, a turning away from the promises and no interest in the promises, and selling his birthright, Hebrews says, for a morsel of food. He realized afterward what he lost. In other words, the great material blessings of what he lost, and he wanted it back, but he couldn't get it back. And what does Hebrews say began to develop in this man's life? Anger. Anger. A spirit of anger developed in the life of Esau and overcame him. So angry at his brother that he had decided that he would kill him. A root of bitterness, Hebrews says, that sprang up. It controlled him. So if you begin to put together the life as we have it pieced together here, what happened to Esau was there was an initial rejection of the Lord's promises, and there was no value for the Lord. There was no interest in the Lord. There was no value for the Lord's way. There was no value for his gospel. There was no value for his plan of redemption. It didn't mean anything to him. He didn't see it. He didn't perceive it as having any real value or benefit for his life. And so what is the imagery that we have? He sold it all for the pleasures of the world. That's what you get. The imagery of Esau is a figure of immediate gratification, translating into an angry life, anger at God. And then even one of the roots here of the verbs, it describes fruits that were born out of this in the life of Esau. There are a few you can notice here in chapter 36 at verse 2. You'll notice that Esau took his wives from the daughters of Canaan, Ada, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the Zibion, the Hivite, and Basamoth, Ishmael's daughter. What was the first real fruit then after this initial rejection and hardening that took place? You see it in who he married. Who he married. What was the great burden of Abraham? When Abraham was selecting the wife for Isaac, remember what Isaac's servant said, well, you know, what should I do? Should I take Isaac back? No, no. And then Abraham said, you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. No way. My son is not to marry a Canaanite. but you shall go to my country and to my family and take a wife for my son Isaac. So Abraham understood God's separate calling on his life. Abraham understood God had separated out a people. That was the essence of the covenant of grace. When he made with him, you're my people. You're special. I've set you apart to me. And then that meant that to take a daughter from the Canaanites was to mingle up that separateness and the two seeds that had been taught to us from Genesis chapter 3. God had separated out two seeds in the earth. Remember? The seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. Two peoples are going forward in the world. And Abraham understood, we can't do that. We can never take and marry an unbeliever. And the Bible, this was something God was so concerned about over and over and over for his people. That believers would marry other believers, because the destruction to the life and the hardship on the life would be so overwhelming, but then it would be an alienation from God. So you have to be blunt. What Abraham understood was that to marry a seed of a Canaanite outside of a Christian was to unite with the seed of the devil. That's what Genesis 3 taught us. So in Genesis 26, this is what we read. When Esau was 40 years old, he took wives, Judith the Hittite, Basemath, the daughter of Elon. And what happened in the hearts and minds of the parents? They were of grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. This hurt. What is the fruit of somebody's life who's running the wrong way? You no care about marriage? But you cause great grief to your parents. Great grief to your parents. Godly parents who've cared and loved you. And you don't care. You know, when the heavy hand of the Lord, when you're running from him and the heavy hand is on you, do you know what you experience? You're in conflict with everyone. You're miserable. And it inevitably comes this statement. I feel trapped. You feel parents are holding you back. What do godly parents want? Your best? Their mind is this, don't be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion is light with darkness? And what accord is Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. You can understand, if you're running, at least why that would be a grief of mind to godly parents. So what he did is he's to show the fruits of this are showing he's despised God's covenant.
What a sober place to find yourself, despising and rejecting God's promises, God's covenant, God's grace and mercy in your life. It is a sober look that will continue on our next broadcast. And this is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Well, in closing our time together today, I'm reminded of other resource materials we have available at our website that would complement what we've heard today. agradio.org is a great place to go if you would like to know more about us and take advantage of other resource materials we have there. And if you have a question that you would like to address Pastor Chris with, maybe today's broadcast has sparked a thought or two, a question, please, by all means, send it off to us. Now, you can either email that to us through our website, agradio.org, or better yet, voice it through your voice memo app. Record your question, your name, and where you're calling from, and then send that to questions@agradio.org. That's questions@agradio.org. You're also welcome to reach us by phone. The number is 888-504-8805. Abounding Grace Radio is also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can visit our website for links to the platform that you prefer to follow. One final note as we close out our program today, we are listener-supported, which means friends of the ministry come alongside and partner with us financially and prayerfully, ensuring that this program continues right here on this radio station. You see, we look to friends like you to help ensure that this broadcast continues to spread the gospel of grace wherever we're at. If you would like to be a part of that, a small gift, large gift, one time or an ongoing monthly gift, we'd love to hear from you. agradio.org, you can give securely online, 888-504-8805. 8805, or write to us, Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you next time we get together for another broadcast of Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.